This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. Another lovely Saturday, our program underway. We should remind folks next week we'll be starting an hour earlier. We'll be on at 11 a.m. next Saturday, but generally we come your way each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer is our host. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Steve. Great to be here. Thanks for that reminder on the early start. I'll get another hour. I can do some more Valentine's Day shopping, I guess.
Sure.
All right. We're really excited here today to be talking with Jim Rubenstein, a shareholder here in our law firm of Moss and Barnett. And as we are want to note, we are a business law firm, and so that we really are representing people, business owners, especially on a broad array of legal matters. And Jim is a bankruptcy lawyer. He also practices commercial law and litigation, and has for 35 years been representing businesses and banks and other lenders in commercial workouts and in bankruptcy proceedings. Jim is also recognized as a super lawyer by the Minnesota Law and Politics peer review, and is also a member of Best Lawyers in America, again, another peer review rated service. And finally, Jim is authoritative. He is certified as a practitioner by the American Bankruptcy Board of Certification. And Jim, I know that, as I said, you've been working in this area for 35 years, and of course you've seen good times and bad, and right now we're seeing, a notable increase in bankruptcy.
That's right, Tom. We have filings going up in many areas, a lot having to do with real estate, media filings. The Star Tribune is a good example of a recent filing. There are many areas, industry sectors, where bankruptcies are on the rise, especially Chapter 11s.
Well, exactly, and that is our topic for today. It's a special part of the bankruptcy laws in America, and that is it's called Chapter 11 because it's the 11th chapter of the bankruptcy code.
That's right.
And I know you have worked on many, many Chapter 11s. You mentioned the pending Star Tribune Chapter 11 proceeding. We just saw Northwest Airlines come out of one a couple of years ago, and now I know you are working as well on the Sun Country Chapter 11, and of course, because of that, we can't discuss that here today, but it is noteworthy that that's also a Chapter 11 proceeding here.
That's right. A lot of Chapter 11 cases, they're usually the ones that get the highest publicity. They're where a company is trying to reorganize itself and make deal arrangements with its creditors so that it can stay in business.
You know, Jim, I must say that it almost seems, in a way un-American that we have a bankruptcy law at all. What gives with that?
Well, a lot of people have asked me about that because a lot of people see bankruptcy and Chapter 11s as a way for a company to avoid paying its just debts. But the bankruptcy code has been around and bankruptcy laws have been around since the Middle Ages in England.
You're kidding.
Bankruptcy actually is an old combination of old English or Latin words mean broken benches. And in the Middle Ages, when a tradesperson was, well, tradesmen, let's be frank, in those days, was not able to pay its debts, its creditors would come in and actually break his bench where he worked, take his assets and liquidate them. And that's we have that kind of bankruptcy here today without the actual breaking of the benches. But the Chapter 11 is a more modern innovation that allows a business to take a step before that ultimate breakup and liquidation of the company to see if it can stay in business, save the jobs, continue to serve its customers. And it's part of our capitalist system, really, that certain companies are going to succeed and certain are going to fail, sometimes for no fault of their own. And as a practical matter, a Chapter 11 in many ways allows a company to give a greater return to its creditors, its employees and such, than simply just going out of business and being broken up.
It still is a bit of a difficult concept to get my mind around in terms of exactly how does a Chapter 11 get any traction in the first place.
Well, a Chapter 11 is for a company that, you know, is in trouble for one reason or another, and they look at what's available. The idea of a Chapter 11 is that once you file a bankruptcy case in Chapter 11, you are subject to an automatic stay, and you are able to fend off your creditors, at least for a short period of time.
Right. It's still a bit of a concept that is hard to really get a grasp of, though.
Oh, well, there's kind of a simple story I like to tell about how what Chapter 11 is really like. And it's based on the old movie Blazing Saddles, which I hope you've seen. But you recall that's a sort of a old Western satire.
A great movie.
I loved it. And there's one scene where the town of Red Rock is getting a new sheriff. And the town is all excited. They've had trouble keeping a sheriff alive. And the band is out and the women and children are out. It's a real festive atmosphere as they're waiting for the sheriff to arrive. And the sheriff is riding across the plain, getting closer and closer. And as more and more people realize the sheriff is African-American, they become more concerned. So that eventually by the time he's in the center of town, the women and children are hidden, the band has stopped playing, and all the men have their guns trained on the new sheriff. Imagine these men with the guns are the creditors. Well, Cleavon Little, who plays the sheriff, gets off his horse, and thinking quickly, he draws his own gun, points it at his head, and says, "Back off where the sheriff gets it." That's kind of what Chapter 11 is all about. Because if the creditors destroy the company, they'll have no sheriff, they'll have no source to repay their debts. But if they back off and give the sheriff a chance or the company a chance to get its feet on the ground and reorganize, they may come out much better in the end.
And so a Chapter 11 is a way for a company to reorganize and get a fresh lease on life. What other kinds of bankruptcy are there?
Well, there are kinds of bankruptcies. One is called a Chapter 7. That's where an individual or a business is really through. Well, a business is really done, and a Chapter 7, a trustee is appointed, and where an individual is seeking a fresh start from its creditors, and they basically with few exceptions of what are called exemptions, an individual turns over all their assets to a trustee, discloses all the liabilities to the trustee. It's up to the trustee to liquidate the assets, pay the creditors from what's available, and the individual has a fresh start. A Chapter 13 is called a wage earner plan, and it is where a debtor tries to, again, provide some kind of plan where it pays out of his or her future income to make some arrangement with its creditors.
Is Circuit City an example of that? Circuit City, we've all read in the news, is a company that is saying we're done and they're liquidating their assets and that's it?
Yes, Circuit City is an example of that. Sometimes you can do that in a Chapter 11 rather than have a trustee appointed where you're just ready to liquidate. Because you have a way of staying in, well, Circuit City is closing its stores. So, yeah, that's what they're doing, basically.
We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Our host, as always, Tom Schroyer. Jim Rubenstein is in. Bankruptcy and Litigation Practice Group at Moss and Barnett. The topic today, Chapter 11, the good, the bad, and the unreal. We'll have much more on that coming up. By the way, our phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. More on the way here on News Radio, 830-WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon, except for next Saturday. We'll be on at 11 a.m. We invite you to join us for that program. Next week, we have a ball game starting at noon, so we'll be on an hour early next week. Tom Schroyer is our host. Jim Rubenstein is here from the Bankruptcy and Litigation Practice Group at Moss and Barnett. Chapter 11, the good, the bad, and the unreal. We go to Dave in Burnsville. By the way, if you have a question about Chapter 11, by all means, call the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We go to the phones. Dave in Burnsville, you're on the air. Dave, hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've listened to your show quite a bit, and I just love it. I've got a quick question for you. I've got two rental properties in Florida. I bought them 3 years ago, put down 20% on both of them, and did an interest-only payment for the last 3 years. This is the fourth year. Now it's a situation where they're undervalued by quite a bit. The bills are getting pretty high, and so what I've done recently is contacted the mortgage company and asked for a deed in lieu or just to have a foreclosure on both of them because there's no way that I can keep paying on them. My question is, what can my mortgage company do to me in terms of once they take the property back, because they've gotten down payments and they've gotten 3 years of interest-only payments, and, you know, just too hard to handle it. What do I have to be concerned about? Do I have to declare bankruptcy down the line, or what would you suggest?
Well, Dave, the bank probably has, well, first of all, the answer I give you is the answer that lawyers don't like to give and clients will like to hear, but it's basically that depends. And what it depends on is what your deal is with the bank, and that can vary from deal to deal. What the bank usually asks for is if you are getting a real estate loan, that you personally are liable for it beyond the value of the real estate if they have to foreclose. So that if a foreclosure occurs, they would have the right, and they would have the right to come and sue you or try to collect from you for any amount they don't recover from the foreclosure process. Now, your real estate is in Florida. That would be governed by Florida law. You should probably consult a lawyer in Florida about how that works and to look at those documents. Whether if there is what they call a big deficiency claim against you and whether that would mean you have to file bankruptcy really depends on your overall financial situation. And again, a lawyer can help advise you, help you assess that, and whether bankruptcy would be appropriate for you.
Jim, would you say that in this current environment that it is at least possible that commercial lenders, banks, and mortgage companies are going to become more inclined, if they're not already inclined, to extend terms, to work with owners in possession of property like our caller, and try to work something out rather than to force the property into foreclosure where who knows what might happen to it? Maybe they don't even get any bidders for it.
I think that's coming. I haven't actually seen it yet, but I think it just seems to make sense to me that banks are going to be overloaded with repossessed real estate, and the inclination would be to perhaps be a little more flexible than they have been to date in attempting workout terms and restructuring those so they can avoid foreclosure.
Now, the question does, though, raise an interesting point. I've always thought that a Chapter 11 was just for businesses. Could it apply to somebody, an individual, say, in this circumstance, who owns a number of different interests?
Yes, a Chapter 11 could. An individual can be in a Chapter 11, most appropriately one who is in business. The caller or other people who own several areas of commercial property might find that a Chapter 11 is a way for them to, as any other business would, buy some time, get some relief or some postponement of creditor action while they try to reorganize their affairs.
We have many more topics, of course, to talk about here in terms of Chapter 11. We'll be talking about not only how to start a Chapter 11 and how they work through the courts, but also what some of the hidden pitfalls are for people who deal with companies who are going into Chapter 11. And before we go to the half-hour break, Jim, I was just wondering what your thoughts are and whether Chapter 11 would make sense for, say, for example, a large auto company in America, where there's been a lot of talk about that possibility lately.
Well, I think I can't really say for sure, of course, but sometimes retailers are very fearful of being in Chapter 11 because they think it will totally tank their sales. But airlines have now found that that's not necessarily the case, and I think that maybe the automakers will also find that.
We have much more on the program coming up. Our phone number on the show, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We are talking about Chapter 11, the good, the bad, and the unreal. Your phone calls are always welcome on this topic and any topic each and every Saturday. Tom Schroyer, the host. Jim Rubenstein joining us in studio. From Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. It is Minnesota Law here on News Radio, 830 WCCO.
Broadcasting back at the WCCO Radio Buick Studios, this is 830 WCCO.
Minnesota Law continues on a Saturday, normally each and every Saturday at noon, but next Saturday we'll be on at 11 a.m. We'll be on an hour early because we have a ball game beginning at noon. Tom Schroyer, host of the program, Jim Rubenstein is in. Today, Chapter 11, The Good, the Bad, and the Unreal.
Thanks, Steve. We are talking about Chapter 11 with Jim Rubenstein. And, Jim, one of the really unusual aspects of Chapter 11 and bankruptcy in general has to do with the law of preferences. And I know it's a complex subject. One of the ways I thought maybe we could talk about getting into that is, you know, I bought some gift cards here for the holidays, and turns out some of that wasn't worth anything because the retailer that I bought the gift card from went into bankruptcy. What's that all about?
Well, when a company goes into bankruptcy, you know, a curtain falls on the day they file, and their world is divided into pre-filing debts and post-filing debts, and a gift card like that is a pre-filing debt. And the one of the unusual or unreal things about the bankruptcy code is if you have a pre-filing debt, whether it's a gift card or you've delivered paper clips that you haven't been paid for to the company, you are bound by what they call the automatic stay from trying to collect that debt. And your only recourse is to go into the bankruptcy court and what remedies are available to you there. As a creditor that we call a pre-filing creditor, the debtor can also look at payments that it made to you prior to the filing within, say, 90 days if you're totally unrelated to the debtor, and recover what are called preferential payments if they've been made to you within 90 days of the bankruptcy.
So let me get that straight. Let's say I'm an employee. I'm working for a company, and I am paid by wages. Am I subject to having to pay those wages back into the bankruptcy court after there's been a bankruptcy filing?
Generally not. If your wages are your regular wages and they've been paying regularly, you're not subject to that kind of recovery. It most often comes up where people have shipped goods to the company. They sell raw materials for a manufacturing company or inventory for a retailer, and they've been paid within the 90 days. They don't have the kind of rights that an employee has. And very often at some kind point in a bankruptcy, these vendors will get a letter from the bankruptcy trustee or from the debtor itself saying, worded sometimes very artfully to make the reader, the vendor, think that the law is that if you've been paid within 90 days of the bankruptcy filing, you owe that money back because it's a preference.
And what should a person who gets one of those letters do?
Well, I think they should talk to their lawyer. It's easy for me to say. There are many ways in which a payment within 90 days is not going to be a preference. And often these are not described in the letter demanding the return of the money. And so it's an experienced lawyer can quickly evaluate your individual situation and to see whether there really is any basis for a preference claim and to seek to recover it.
Now, this law of preferences, is it adding or could it potentially add to some of the heartbreak for victims of, say, the Madoff and some of these other Ponzi schemes?
Well, I suppose it could. There's a law of preference, and there's also other kinds of transfers that can be recovered once you file bankruptcy.
And, for example, if I'm a person who put my money into the Madoff scheme, if I pulled money out of it, say, by chance, just within 90 days before the bankruptcy filing, right, I might have to pay some of that back or all of it back?
You might, because the idea is, and that's it's kind of why the bankruptcy code, I call it the cross between two old TV shows, which are The Twilight Zone and Let's Make a Deal. The Twilight Zone part of it is you've been paid a debt that you've been owed, interest you were entitled to, or return on your principal. Nothing, you didn't do anything wrong, the company did anything wrong, and now suddenly someone's trying to get it back. And the Let's Make a Deal part is there are so many ins and outs to this law of preference is that the focus is on trying to get the parties to agree to some resolution of it.
We've been hearing about something called a clawback, also applied to the Ponzi schemes. And in the case of Madoff, it would involve somebody, I take it the bankruptcy trustee or a receiver, trying to claw back money into the bankrupt estate. But in this case, it would be from people who were actually victimized by the crime.
That's right. Again, it's the idea that all these people who are victimized should be treated equally, even if some of them might have gotten some money right before things fell apart. They would give them or pay that money back, and then that whole pot would be distributed to all victims on a more equitable basis.
Now, I'm still confused because when Northwest Airlines went through their Chapter 11, I had many frequent flyer miles built up. I think it was more than 100,000, and yet when they came out of Chapter 11, I still had the same number. What was that all about? Why didn't I lose some of that benefit?
Well, it's kind of the difference between an ongoing business and one that something like the Bernie Madoff scheme, which is a scheme that has collapsed. In Northwest Airlines, they were able to convince the court that although it's a debt of some kind, these frequent flyer miles, it's an extremely strong marketing tool and required to allow the company to honor those frequent flyer commitments. Otherwise, the fallout from disgruntled flyers would be tremendous.
And I suppose some of that same logic came into play in the recent bankruptcy involving the Star Tribune, where I believe it was just the day before yesterday, the bankruptcy court allowed the trustee to make payments to employees who accepted severance packages before the bankruptcy filing, whereas the other creditors didn't want that those payments to be made.
That's right. And in a case of employees, they're also entitled to a priority in terms of their treatment. So that was part of the rationale for that as well.
So are different classes of creditors treated differently within a bankruptcy proceeding?
Yes. There are, first of all, creditors who whose debts come about after the filing date, and those are what we call administrative creditors. They're entitled to get paid in full before any pre-filing creditors are paid. Then among pre-filing creditors, the bankruptcy laws have sort of set out various priorities. For example, employees and salespeople are entitled to a priority for their wages earned within 6 months of the filing of about $11,000.
That's all?
That's all. They're also entitled to their benefit plans, or the plan is entitled to that amount. If you've made a deposit, such as on layaway, to buy something, that has a priority in terms of getting your money back of about $2,500. And these figures are adjusted every few years for inflation. Sometimes there are some fairly special interest priorities. For example, U.S. fishermen have a priority for fish they've delivered to a fish processing plant, for example, of about $5,000. So it varies. And once you get through the various categories of priorities, taxes owed are another priority. Then you have the great body of general unsecured creditors, all of whom are to be treated relatively equally in terms of a plan of reorganization. And then finally, there are secured creditors, people who have collateral for their debts, who are entitled to the value of their collateral in one way or another in a case.
So time is fleeting again. It's gone by very fast. But let's, before we get to the next break, talk a little bit about exactly what is the life of a Chapter 11 from start to finish in a very general way, Jim?
Well, you file the case. Usually there's a period where the business stabilizes. A committee of creditors is often appointed to negotiate on behalf of the unsecured creditors as a group. Eventually, the debtor proposes a written plan of reorganization, which it submits to the creditors and to the court, and the court approves the plan. The creditors get to vote on the plan. And if the plan is approved, that's when the debtor comes out of bankruptcy, and the plan, which has different ways to treat different creditors, becomes sort of a new contract between the creditors and the debtor.
Do all of these different interests have to agree on that workout plan or that reorganization plan?
They don't have to. Ideally, they will, but there is a technical term, we call it a cram down, where a reluctant class of creditors don't vote for the plan, the judge could make a determination that their treatment is fair and equitable anyway and confirm the plan over their objection.
Well, and one of the things I wanted to bring up was in the case of maybe Delta or Northwest Airlines, that they were able to change the terms of their agreements with the unions through the bankruptcy.
Yes, that's right. That's a very controversial area. The bankruptcy code has a special section on union contracts, and basically it says if the union and the company can't agree on any changes to the terms of the agreement, they have to negotiate some more. And if they can't agree, they have to negotiate some more. It's a complicated statute, but that's basically what it gets at. Ultimately, when all the opportunities to negotiate have been exhausted, the court will be asked to rule on whether the changes that the debtor wants, the company wants, are appropriate.
And that goes back to the automobile business. There was some thought that maybe the automobile manufacturers would go in that direction because of the union contracts and some of the difficulties, but the unions have been giving back and trying to work with the automobile manufacturers.
That's right. And I was reading about the Star Tribune case, which I can talk about because I'm not involved in it. But they had obtained some concessions from union and non-union employees, but it just wasn't enough in terms of their overall situation.
And so, Jim, it is a matter of really forcing everyone to come to the table when a business files for a Chapter 11. It's a basic way of saying we have to talk and see if we can't work this out.
That's the way the good ones work, and when it really works well, it's when everyone is trying to pursue their own interest, but they all deep down realize that the best thing to happen is for this company to survive and emerge from Chapter 11.
We have much more coming up. A great program today, Chapter 11, the good, the bad, and the unreal. Jim Rubenstein is in the studio. Tom Schreier, our host, of course, from Moss & Barnett. This is Minnesota Law here on News Radio 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law coming your way each and every Saturday at noon, except for next Saturday. We'll be on the air at 11 a.m. Once again, Minnesota Law presented by Moss & Burnett. Tom Schreier, Jim Rubenstein in studio today.
Steve, we wanted to go back to the gift card concept.
Worried about you. I thought you have these gift cards, and are they worthless?
Well, Jim, what is the answer? What happens in a bankruptcy with the people who have these gift cards with Circuit City or Lennon's and such, those kinds of situations?
Well, they're creditors like many others. If the marketing angle is so strong as it is for like the frequent flyer miles, the debtor often tries to find a way to honor those in some fashion. But if they're not honored, if the company is totally out of business and can't honor it, then you become a creditor like any other creditor of the company. And the plan that the debtor puts together may pay these creditors 10 cents on the dollar, may pay them 100 cents on the dollar, but it's sure to be quite a ways down the road in terms of months or years before you see any money. And whether it's cents on the dollar or 100% of the dollar really all depends on what is there of the company and what kind of proceeds can it generate to pay its creditors. Some people will take 10 cents on the dollar and be delighted. You know, if they're really if it's more than they could possibly hope for if the assets were sold. Others, at 90%, it's not a good deal because there's more value there.
Jim, there's been some criticism of the bankruptcy process in general, but in particular Chapter 11s as really being counterproductive in terms of whether or not they're efficacious at the end of the day.
Well, there have been a few studies that have been made that a Chapter 11 generates a better deal for the company than trying to do something in a workout mode without going into Chapter 11. And some of them don't work, frankly, and a lot of time and money is spent trying to reorganize a company that doesn't.
Isn't that the downside in terms of a Chapter 11, the time it takes and the cost of administration?
Yes, those are both problems for the debtor and for its creditors. The The costs can be substantial. You see reports of attorney's fees and consultants' fees in the hundreds of thousands or millions for some of the bigger companies. But they seem to be consistent in terms of it being a very high-cost type of process. Certainly for smaller companies, it's a larger percentage of their cash flow than for some of these large companies. So it can be daunting, but when you need it, it's there. It's a save the company kind of thing.
Well, can a company ever be forced into a bankruptcy, either a Chapter 11 or a Chapter 7, by outsiders?
Yes. The law provides that an involuntary filing can be made by three creditors so long as their total debt is about $13,475, unsecured and undisputed.
So suffice it to say, if two of the creditors of one of our large domestic auto carriers got, or companies got together, they could force one of them into bankruptcy.
That's correct. You don't see it very often, even though it seems like a relatively simple procedure, because usually creditors prefer to pursue their own collection. It, once they force a company into bankruptcy, it puts the brakes on those collections, and the whole process begins, and the outcome is very uncertain and very time-consuming. Also, the debtor has an opportunity to contest that kind of involuntary petition, and sometimes they manage to stay out of bankruptcy that way. So usually you see these involuntary cases where the creditors suspect that money is going out the door improperly, that the owners are taking money out on the side or huge expenses are being rung up with no justification.
So in the short time we have left, can you give a real quick thumbnail in terms of what makes a business a candidate for a Chapter 11 in case somebody out there is wondering if they should be thinking about that?
Well, I think a business is a candidate for Chapter 11 if they have a source of cash in which to operate and they're having financial problems because of their prior debts, so that they can file, they can make arrangements to use the revenue they're generating, or they can borrow money on a post-filing priority basis while they try to put together a plan, try to see if the business stabilizes, or find a way to make an orderly sale of the business as a going concern.
And so a prime consideration would be, just like Congress has asked the auto companies, to come up with a plan to show that a reorganization or move forward can be fruitful and productive and keep the companies in business if they get some more credit.
That's right. And you don't necessarily need to have your plan when you file. Sometimes you're forced into filing without a plan. And very often you're filed without a plan. There are some what they call prepackaged plan where it's all been negotiated beforehand. But you really do need to buy the time, and the court will give you a certain amount of time to stabilize and figure out what's the best way to go.
And if you can't come up with a plan, then what happens to your Chapter 11 proceeding?
Well, the other way the plans end, these Chapter 11 cases end, if the plan isn't confirmed, is the company's liquidated, it converts to a Chapter 7, or in rare cases, it's dismissed, and everyone is put back as if the bankruptcy wasn't filed at all.
Well, Jim, it's been great to meet you. Jim Rubenstein from Wallace & Barnett. As always, Tom, the show went very quickly today. Fascinating topic. I learned a lot in the program today. Next week we'll be on at 11 a.m.
Indeed we will, with Jim Vetter talking about creative and innovative ways to resolve family law dissolutions.
That is Minnesota Law next Saturday at 11 a.m.